Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ghouls. Welcome to an extra strange episode of Doc Sludge's Toxic Cinema. Tonight I'm joined by Carl, and we're going to be talking about a very, very weird little snippet of film history that mostly hit the drive-ins, and that's Terror in the Buff. What? Nudist horror films. Yes, everyone, those are a thing. Yes, they did happen. Are they good? That's why I call the show Doc Sludge's Toxic Cinema, emphasis on toxic. Anyway, how you doing tonight, Carl?
Oh, I'm here. I'm ready for some boobs and some monsters, so go for it.
Oh, good. So, I could just make a joke. Well, you know, it's about giblets wiggling in the wind. Anyway, so, yeah, nudist horror films. That was a thing back in the 60s.
Let me just pop in here for a second. So the basic idea of nudist films were in the late 50s. And there was a court case where they said if there was no sexuality and it was just documentary, then they could have nudist films. And so, you know, the joke was it was always at nudist camps and there was always volleyball. Always. Until, and now I'll kick it over to you.
Yes. And another thing was that I noticed in these nudist films is that they were not complete nudists. What do you mean by not complete nudists? Excellent question. So the gentlemen in these films, 90% of the films, usually had shorts on or they were carrying something like a towel so you don't see the dangly bits, which is fine. Fine and dandy with me. And also, when it came to the women, yes, they would not have tops on. They'd be wandering around with, like, you know, away from the camera. Of course, you see butt cheeks, male and female. And when it came to female frontal stuff, they usually were holding on to a towel or wearing panties or a book or something. And, you know, or they would sit.
Well,
they would sit. And, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you go first. It's your show. You go.
Okay. Okay, then I'll go. Yeah. I'm just joking with you, Carl. It's all good. So
don't worry about
it. Or they'll just like sit in strange positions so you don't see. So, okay. Now, go ahead, Carl. Go for it.
So there's a reason that female genitalia is called bush. Know where I'm going here?
Because it was always bushes.
And I'm dead serious about that. The reason that word came up for female genitalia is specifically linked to nudist films. I bet you didn't know that.
I didn't know that. But it makes me think about, you know, Nude on the Moon and different other flicks besides the ones we're going to talk about tonight that you would use foliage to block out certain pieces. Okay.
Well, no, that's really true. And, you know, the Austin Powers did that, you know. But I get this information from my guru who ran the drive-in back in the 70s when I was like 14, 15 years old and, quote, working for him. You know, he told me all this stuff and you know, whether or not it's absolutely true or it's just passed down as you know, hyperbole, it doesn't matter. Because that's what he told me. He said, that's exactly why you call a female's genitalia bush.
And the male's twig and berries. Oh, I forget. Did you forget about that one?
Absolutely.
The old twig and berries. Okay, so little, and also there are a lot of movies that were called Nudie Cuties, which would they're basically like goofy little films that would bounce around with pasties or whatever, and you know a monster would just go boo 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 boo, or you know a guy who's a complete idiot who has no sex drive whatsoever would be in the movie, like an alien from the Buttless Galaxy or something, a la House on Bear Mountain. So, yeah, it's a really weird, weird area of film. So the two main movies we're going to be talking about tonight are actually a double feature on Something Weird DVD. And it's a double feature of The Beast That Killed Women and The Monster of Camp Sunshine. And the disc is also packed with like a bunch of extras, a lot of nudie shorts and everything. And some of them are from actual pre-code Hollywood history, like around in the 1920s. So that, you know, it's not, and I'll tell you something about it. These are not erotic in the slightest. They're entertaining, they're silly, but they're not sexual at all. It's odd little things. Okay, so let's start off here with The Beast That Killed Women. Now, reading off the back here, poor Dolores Carlos, unable to get even a tan, she and her hubby scurry off to the Miami nudist camp at precisely the same moment the camp is invaded by the Beast That Killed Women, name drop, a goofy-looking gorilla with an appetite for the ladies. Murder and panic quickly spread through the camp, and I will quote a line from this movie, exactly how it was said, and I lost it. Okay. It was horrible, officer. He was big, huge, and hairy. Said exactly like that. So basically the gist is, there's a really angry gorilla going in.
You don't get to act at these work, Doc. I'm just saying.
That, I was doing it verbatim.
I know, but it still needs work, buddy. I'm just saying.
Yeah, so true. So basically, you've got this grumpy, pissed-off killer gorilla in a nudist camp, and he only comes out at night. And I think he takes out, like, one person and throws a guy in the lake. So, of course, the police get involved. And they end up taking out the gorilla at the end. And, of course, there's volleyball games. There's the nudist reading. They're walking all over the place. You know, you've got the beautiful little music. It's only 60 minutes long. And, man, it feels every minute of it. It's not a good movie, but it's one of those things. It's like a train wreck with lots of ta-tas bouncing around. You just go, oof, yeah, this is a mess. It's got a lot of technical issues. Like, they didn't use enough light at the night scenes. The boom microphone that they used only worked half the time. So you'd have these actors and actresses talking, and like, three out of five words were muffled, or you wouldn't be able to hear them because of the equipment. It was just bleh. Oh, it's in color too, which is. I mean, it's actually really neat. It's definitely looked good for the time with color photography, and it was made in 1965. Yeah, it's. I would definitely. It's not the best. It's not the worst. So. If you're interested in movies like this, I would definitely get the Something Weird video DVD anyway, because of all the extra features and stuff that's on it. So, yeah, The Beast That Killed Women was a thing. It was a movie. So what do you think of it?
I have a question, Doc.
Yes.
Was Joey Bento involved in this at all? Are we sure?
No. I can verify that he was not involved with this one. Our friend Joey Bento.
I'll also mention something here very briefly. We joke about Joey, but Joey's a good friend of the podcast. But also, I was guest on a show on Wildside Cinema with Stephen Ronquillo, my former partner, yesterday with Bruce Glover. And Bruce is an actor that's been around for many, many years. And he said he got his start in a gorilla suit in a cabaret burlesque throwing naked women around. Seriously. And so, you know, this whole thing about apes and naked women, it goes way back to burlesque. Way, way back. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Yes, Carl's right, because there was this one of the shorts, actually, let me see here, from 1952, there's a naked woman and a gorilla. And you can actually, if you look further down line, more, you'll find a lot more women with guys in ape suits than you would ever expect when it came to like those little nudie shorts. It's really weird. But that's what we're talking about tonight. So, ha!
You know, okay, and then, so, of course, you got the big butt sex, too, which is the same thing.
Well, you know what they say about guys with big feet. I mean, really. No, that's not.
Yeah, they need, they need the magnifying glasses to find it. Yeah, I'm well aware.
Well, I thought they were going to say that they have to wear big socks and big shoes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
As you probably know, I have big feet, so you take it for what it is, okay?
Okay. So, I know you've seen the movie, so what do you think of it, Carl?
It's a movie.
That's my line.
It has titties. That's about it. Not a good one. I mean, if people really want to see some good, solid nudie cuties, go back to The Immoral Mr. T's by Russ Meyers, you know, any of his stuff. But yeah, this is a knockoff, and the technical aspect of it is non-existent. So yeah, this one's not a good one.
No. Now we're going to hop over to the monster. This one's... Oh, boy. The Monster of Camp Sunshine, the title keeps going, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Nature. Now, doesn't that kind of remind you of Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, or something?
Of course it reminds you of Dr. Strangelove. Duh!
Well, this one was made in 1964, and it's in black and white, and it makes no sense whatsoever. Pardon my language, but I needed to put that in there because this movie frustrated the hell out of me and put me to sleep three times. I fell asleep three times watching this thing today. Anyway, so basically, the plot synopsis off the back of the Something Weird DVD is Hugo, the tubby gardener of the New York Nature Camp, turns into the monster of Camp Sunshine when he unwittingly drinks from a stream contaminated with a mysterious chemical that releases the killer instincts in rats. And, Hugo happens to be a rather chubby man with a rather large axe and a haircut that looks like mulch from the Three Stooges. I am being completely honest with everybody. This is a weird... Okay, I've used the word weird an awful lot, but this is beyond weird. This is batshit. This movie is batshit insane. Because at the beginning of the film, we have Monty Python-style animation. Like, Terry Gilliam was paid $1,000 to do animation for the intro of this movie. And it's so bizarre. It's like this, one of the animations is this old guy doing like sit-ups, but they have him flipped over so it looks like he's like dry humping stuff. And there's cannons and test tubes and all sort of crap floating around. It's bizarre. And another thing is that the people made this movie thought it would be a brilliant idea, emphasis on air quotes brilliant, to put in title cards like you see in the 1920s silent movies every once in a while. Like, meanwhile, back at the camp, at Camp Sunshine, or Hugo was then released. And there's barely any dialogue between characters in this movie. I think there's maybe 3 to 5 minutes of actual talking between people. It's mostly narrated by the main character in this film, who I swear to God was wearing a black wig that looked terrible on her. and she narrates it like it was a noir film. You know, the husky detective who constantly smokes cigarettes, like, it was a dark day back in 1952. She walked in my office, legs up to here. Okay. That's basically what it was. And there would be like whole 3 to 5 minute sections of this movie where you have people who are in various areas of undress having picnics. There is no talking. It's all music. I swear to God, I heard music, that whole tune, that foghorn leghorn hums in this movie. And other sort of things. And I'm just watching this going, what the hell is going on? And, oh my God, I just fell asleep 3 times. It is bizarre, everyone. This is one of the weirdest, most crazy-ass movies I have seen. You know, I think one person gets killed in this movie. Actually, two, if you count Hugo. And this does not have a normal ending, okay? I think the people who made this flick seriously ran out of ideas, or maybe snorted some coke and went, hey, I've got some World War II footage. Want to use it? Sure. The military comes in and blasts Hugo with tanks, with Spitfires, the aircraft Spitfires, tons and tons of army guys just firing into oblivion. And all of a sudden, Hugo is dead. That's the movie in a nutshell. It is absolutely guano, as in batshit bonkers. So, yeah.
So, I needed to jump in here. This is not batshit. It's just bad. It's very bad. It's very bad. Sit in the corner and think about what you've done. You made him go to sleep 3 times. How dare you?
Yeah.
So, one of the things is one of two things happened. Either they didn't have a sound reel for most of the film, or they lost the sound reel for most of the film. So it was filmed silently. And then sound was post-dubbed. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That happens a lot with really cheap films because they don't have the money to do it right.
Exactly.
And the whole idea is this time, you know, they wanted fillers and they wanted nudies. So who the hell cares what the quality is? And that was one of the real downfalls of the movie Cuties, is because when Russ started them, he was a great filmmaker. And suddenly you got all these copycats who don't know how to hell to run a camera, let alone, you know, actors who can't act or anything. It just becomes really bad. And this one's one of the worst.
It is, but you know what throws me? And I'll be honest with everyone. If you go to different websites who rate things, you know, rate movies and whatever, you can't really trust the ratings. Because in all honesty, The Beast That Killed Women is a much better movie, and that's saying a lot. And IMDb only gives that 1.5 stars. Now, IMDb gives this little monstrosity 3 stars. 3 stars out of 10. I'm going, how? In what world is this? I mean, there were some creative ideas, like if they had been executed the right way, it would have been hysterical in some areas. Like in the first scene of the movie, you've got main character and this girl she lives with, and this weird, creepy music is playing. And, you know, you think it's the background music of the movie, and all of a sudden the girl says, man, this creepy music is really getting me. Put something else on. And the girl, you know, takes the needle off the record, and the music stops, and she switches it to something happier. If that had been done right, it would have been very Python-esque and kind of entertaining, but it just wasn't done well at all.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. Now, I will say this before we get off, we go on to the next thing, is that this DVD was actually given to me for my birthday 1 year.
From awesome.
So I absolutely covet this DVD. And you know, should you buy it? Sure. We're not telling you they're good movies, but, you know, for me, it has a lot of, you know, there's a lot of emotion there because that was bought for my birthday. So yeah, just wanted to share that with you.
Yeah, and I have to add in, I'm a huge fan of sleazy movies. These kind of fit the bill. They're not that sleazy. They're more of an oddity, which is, that's pretty cool. And plus, something weird. I just love their label. Like I said, their DVD is full of extras, trailers, little shorts and stuff, and radio advertisements. I love something weird. So definitely, if you're interested,
and
pick it up.
Yes. They always have this pictures of stuff with this musical group called the Dead Elvi doing rockabilly. Very cool.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, let's hop away from these and move on to something better, if you can call it that. All right, go for it, Carl.
Oh, I can. We're going to step up in quality here and in weirdness and in absolute bust your gut out laughing. There's a guy. His name is Mark Pirro. He is a god, as far as I'm concerned. Mark Pirro does these really cheap films. And they're just silly and crazy and nutso. Yeah, he started out in 86 or 87 with a film called Death Row Game Show, which is absolutely hysterical. And he went on to do A Polish Vampire in Burbank, Attack of the Queer Wolf, another one of my favorite kaiju movies called Rectuma, and yes, it's what you think it is.
The giant rectum.
But he also
damn near killed him.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes. No, you have to go there. Absolutely. But he gave us a wonderful film, which is not only a nudie monster movie, it's a musical. And it's called Nudist Colony of the Dead. Hysterical. One of the funniest things in the world. I can't tell you how much I love this movie. And basically, it starts out with this church taking over this land that's a nudist colony, and they kill all the nudists. And years later, you know, some young kids come by camping, and the dead nudists come back to attack them and attack the church and the people behind their murder. All along singing Inky Dinky Doodah Day. And no, I'm not Jews. It's just, the puns just go off. I mean, it's like every friggin' joke is a pun. It does not stop. It's one of the wittiest, funniest, no-budget films you've ever seen. This man is a gem, and I guarantee you, if you like Nudist Colony of the Dead, you'll like damn near everything he ever did. And his name is Mark Pirro. You can buy all his films at www.pirromount, that's PirroMount.com. And I love him. And by the way, do you know that someone we both know worked on this film?
Really? Who's that?
That would be Chris Gilpin.
Oh, cool.
Chris is
looks like we have a
contributor to Wedge Chop magazine. We both know him through his book. And Chris actually is one of the crew of this film.
It looks like we have a caller. I'm going to patch him.
Cool.
I'm going to call. Patch this person and see who it is. Hello, caller 441.
Good morning, gents. How are you both?
Oh, my God, it's fog!
Well, I say good morning. It's nearly 1:30 in the morning here, but I'm enjoying the show that much. I had to ring in and just let you know that I was listening.
Wow.
Well, we really appreciate it. It's good to hear from you.
Yes, you are one of our fans that we most love, my dear sir. So.
Oh, you flatterer, you. Flattery will get you everywhere.
Well, I don't know if I want to go there, Bod, okay?
I was actually, when you were talking about these films with nudists in them, and I was just thinking, and you said it yourself there, even these days, the women, it seems to be a double standard where, women can be naked or topless, but the men, they seem to shy away from it, don't you? It just,
yeah.
I just wondered if you noticed the double standard.
The double standard is absolutely set in stone because these films were specifically for men to ogle at. They weren't for
women.
That's
right, yes.
So it's all about the tatas.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? The TNA, wasn't it, in the 70s? It was all about that, and it's kind of... I was just wondering what you thought, about the fact that it still seems to be a double standard where a lot of actresses maybe feel pressurized to do nude scenes where the male actors are, they may take their shirt off, but very rarely do they appear, nude.
Yeah, there are exceptions like Viggo Mortensen in Eastern Promises and that sort of thing. But you're right, and certainly, it is a sexist mindset, and certainly there have been articles I've read where certain actresses have been pressured to do so. And it is unfortunate.
I think it goes back to the old casting couch thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how a lot of the young actresses, and it kind of ties into maybe the Me Too movement that's come up recently with certain people. It certainly seems as though in some places that kind of mentality still exists.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did a Hammer show, and there was a European version. I forget which film it was right now. I don't have it in front of me. But Hazel Court actually did a nude scene, and this is back in the 60s.
Yes.
And whether or not she was pressured or not, that, to sell a film, if you had nudity and you were selling it in Europe, it was more apt to be bought, and so on and so forth. So there's that pressure. There's all of that.
Yeah. But do you think that even now there's still that pressure on perhaps younger actresses, up-and-coming actresses, and it's basically, if you want to get ahead in the business, you've got to go nude, you've got to do sex scenes, there's still that kind of,
I actually think that's the
pressure.
I think it's, before the Me Too movement, that was definitely a very big thing where you had to show off your, forgive the word usage, to show off your assets as a female, as an actress. And now because of the Me Too movement, I think that pressure has seriously been taken off of the female actresses.
Yes.
And they can now get work through their skills, through how professional they are instead of if they look good in negligee or whatever. It's a very good thing because this gives everyone the chance to prove that they can do that they can do an acting job and they can do it well.
But do you find that some of these actresses who refuse to do sex scenes or refuse to go naked, do you think that their careers suffer?
I think Rose McGowan, her career was decimated after she refused to do several scenes and then tried to expose Weinstein before the whole before everything
exploded. Yeah, that's the big name that crops up, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I was reading the autobiography of Marilyn Monroe, and you know, if you read that, she kind of said, you know, whenever she turned up for an interview or she turned up for an audition, 99.9% of the time she would end up on the casting couch. And I suppose it's really, you know, how badly do you want to be famous?
Well, you know, there's also the other side of it, too. You know, you take a look at someone like Helen Mirren, who certainly hasn't been shy and posits her sexuality in a very positive light and a very controlling light that she controls it.
Yes.
And that, to me, also is a way to combat this type of, you know, casting couch mentality and such. Now, these women in these films back in the day, you know, there's some more innocence here. You know, they didn't get really until the late 60s, early 70s.
I mean, as you said, Russ Meyer, they're more, in a way, they're more comedy, but they are as well kind of exploitation. And it's kind of, to get people into the movie theater, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, sex sells, unfortunately.
Oh, yes.
You know, and certainly we've had guests that have been in the hardcore scene, including one of our favorites, Gene Silver, who looks at it in a very positive light. And then there are those like Linda Lovelace, of course, you know, who were taken advantage of. So
it's what you want to get out of it at the end of the day, isn't it, really? You know, if you go in it and you kind of get something out of it, maybe fame or money. And I know a few porn stars have gone on to be in mainstream films. I think sometimes it doesn't always lead to where these people think it would take them. You know, they'll get promised.
Well, absolutely.
You know, they'll get promised the earth, and then suddenly it's, you know, kind of, well, you know, when you start getting older, you're kind of replaced by a younger model.
Well, that happens a lot.
Yes.
So, Doc, what do you think?
I fully agree with that, actually. Yeah, when Bonnie, you were saying about some of the adult actresses who have made it into mainstream, I would have to say Tracy Lords comes to mind because she's been in a lot of movies like Blade, and I could name a couple, and also Skinner, which is a horror flick. I can't think of her name, but she was in Zombie Strippers. And a lot of Jenna Jameson, yes. And a lot of the adult film actresses have gone into actual film production and sexual education, like Nina Hartley. And she does all sorts of, I think she has her master's in psychology. Yeah. So, I mean, she's a very brilliant woman and she tries to educate people. You know,
also was Annie Sprinkle.
Yes.
And
if you
And again, a big shout out to Jeannie, who made her non-porn film debut this year in a movie called Clownado. So, you know, who knows where it will lead you.
Right, and the movies like the ones we were talking about, Monster Camp Sunshine, That Beast That Killed Women, another movie example like Nude on the Moon, these movies kind of have like a feeling of almost like innocence to them because the nudity is not being used to promote sex, well, in a, you know, actual intercourse or used in a sexual manner, but it's used to sell a movie. And, you know, Nude on the Moon was actually produced and directed by a woman. So, you know, it's just Doris Lissman, yeah. I mean, these older films have this sense of just, like I said, innocence or just fun to them where, you
I
know,
think
there's
those older
also
films
darker,
are just so. More for titillation, really, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not forget, okay, that it goes way back before film. Okay, how many new paintings are there? Done by Raphael and all these people. Don't think that that wasn't part of it, too. This goes way, way, way back. And whether or not you consider it a controlling aspect or you consider it, you know, look at the natural beauty of the form. You know, at least in these early films, it's about the natural beauty of the form. And it's not, you know, the roughies, it's not the sleazies. It's the nudies, which are a much more innocent type of entertainment.
Do you think it changed in the 60s, though, when, you know, the Summer of Love and, you know, kind of things opened up and people were pushing the boundaries.
It actually changed in about 65, 66 when you get into what they call the roughies. And those are ones where the women are beaten up and like Scum of the Earth, Touch of Her Flesh, the Finley Flesh Trilogy. These really change things. And then, of course, that's an... don't forget there were always stag films and things like that, too. There was always pornography under the table. So you know, it became more and more, male-dominated, and the females were the victims. And that's unfortunate. But that's what happened.
Yeah, you can definitely see the transition through these different films. Like, we had the innocence here, like Carl was saying, you get into the roughies where they started getting into S&M a bit and, you know, like the more aggressive and just kind of movies that make you go, oof, I need a shower. After watching this, that's
oh, absolutely. The Flesh Trilogy, mm-hmm. you need like 3 showers. No shit.
Yes. Well, I think it happened as well. I mean, just going back to the Hammer films, suddenly, you know, they started, you know, Vampire Lovers, and suddenly, you know, where beforehand there hadn't been the kind of sexual kind of element to it, suddenly they were going down the road of, you know, nudity and toplessness and implied lesbianism and the kind of, you know, what was it a sign of the times or was it that, you know, they just had to do these things in films to keep the audience?
I think it's a combination of both. Let's not forget, it's not just the Hammer films. If you go into the Italian giallo films, you know, the proto slashers of Mario Bava and Dario Argento, the sleaze factor comes up quite a bit, and then the violence factor does too. A lot of that comes from from
just suddenly seemed that with the nudity came violence.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it kind of, I mean, it kind of seemed to be, I mean, there was one of the Frenzy, for example, Alfred Hitchcock. That is a really dark movie about a murderer.
I love that film, by the way.
Who kind of, you know, and for the time, I mean, you see him Peeping Tom. You see them kind of, you know, almost, I wouldn't say raping the women, but it's certainly implied. And it just suddenly seemed that with nudity came violence.
Well, you know, violence too, you know, of course you talk about Peeping Tom. Then you get into things like Bonnie and Clyde, where the violence was really amped up. And then, of course, the Wild Bunch. It all, see what happened really was the downfall of the Hays Code. Once the Hays Code really started dissipating, which is in the late 50s, early 60s, and particularly with the films that weren't put into the MPAA, that's when Russ Meyers got through and so on and so forth. All of this just started this snowball effect that we're talking about.
Yeah, it just seemed that in some movies that suddenly when they brought sex into it, it kind of, it was shown in a very negative way. And then, you know, kind of, the woman was always a victim. The woman was beaten up or raped or was, you know, in an abusive relationship. And it just, you know, in some of the films, it was really, even though they couldn't actually show these things, it was certainly very heavily implied.
Yeah. Well, Doc, any final thoughts on what Bond was saying?
Well, I can definitely see what he's talking about. And, yeah, a lot of these older nudie films, they didn't have, I mean, they had, like, the Beast of Copeland, but it really, you didn't see anything horrific happen. And a lot of the other films, like House on Bear Mountain, there's no violence whatsoever, and the guys are, the males in the movies are pretty much out of, let's say, Bond hung up. So, thank you, Bond. We appreciate you calling very, very much.
Oh, absolutely. Love it.
And they were just goofy, topless movies, essentially, just created to make a buck. And unfortunately, the whole sexual violence thing came through into the 60s, and it just kind of got pretty yucky from there. So, I mean, that's why I wanted to keep, you know, this little era. You know, people, I wanted to get information out about this little strange era to people to see, you know, this is kind of neat if you're interested in it. If not, you know, that's okay too. And I think that's about it. Go ahead, Carl.
Go ahead, Doc. Go ahead.
I'm all set.
Oh, okay. So what do we have coming up on our next shows? Tomorrow, I know that Chrissy is doing a show on science fiction movies that make you cry. Interesting topic. What do you think, Doc?
Yeah, I can definitely say that there are a couple movies that are sci-fi that have made me cry. But I'm going to be working, unfortunately, so I can't make it to the show. Also, you have a show on Friday?
Yes, we have a show on Friday. And we're going to do a show, Gone Too Soon, TV shows that were canceled way too soon, like after a year or even not a year. And I can tell you this right now, I've got confirmation, both Alan Bryan and Adam Ferenz will be with us. And they're perennial guests of the shows and good friends of mine. So it'll be good to have both of them on for Friday. Then what do you have on Sunday coming up?
Oh, we have an all-time classic movie watch coming up on Sunday. I've talked to my crew, and we will be doing a live watch of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So this is going to be an epic, epic blast of laughter. It's going to be tons of fun. We invite everybody to listen to our shows Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. So we're going to have a great time.
Absolutely. And just to let you know, Monday there's going to be – we actually have a show on Monday and Tuesday. Monday is going to be a show with Daniel Kramer on what we like to call Bushleaguers. And this is a show that I hope goes well because this might become a regular show, a monthly show for us. And it's called Bushleaguers, and it's about directors that have gone under the radar but have done really, really good stuff. And Dan's been doing a really good series on his Facebook page, and I asked him to come on. And then Tuesday we have a special show, which we're still getting together, but let's just say we're going to be teaming up with Incredibly Strange Films, the Facebook group. And we're going to be doing a show on strange movies and where to find them in streaming. So, you know, we're going to be going into the depths of Hulu and Netflix and that and finding some of the most strange things you can watch. So we're going to do that Tuesday. We'll have more information on that as we get that more together. So that's what we have. We're being real busy. We're busy being
yes, and Carl, one question before we go. Do you know why most nudist camps are in warmer states?
Okay, most nudist camps are
in warmer states like Florida, Carolinas, Alabama, an area?
Well, simply because that way the berries don't shrivel and the melons don't the melons grow, I guess. I mean, that's a guess, so I don't know.
Nobody likes frozen giblets. Anyway, it's time to go.
Yeah, but you have to cook them, okay? You know, if you cook them, frozen giblets are fine.
Yikes.
Never mind.
Anyway. Okay, so thank you, Bon, for calling in. We always appreciate talking to you. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and have a good night and stay warm because it's still pretty chilly out there.
Absolutely. Have a good night. And again, thanks, Doc, for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for coming. All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.